how has 4th edition coming out changed the way your website traffic or talk is working? Has it in any way? Or
it completely shot up, like, in numbers. Like
after D&D XP?
After D&D, I mean, D&D XP was a huge event for us in the first place. Mm-hmm. Like, because, you know, we...
Local.
Yeah, well, it was local, which was good for us, but... That, like, the entire seminar I typed up.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you did a lot of work there.
I posted it immediately afterwards, yeah. And that's, like, been our biggest traffic post ever. Like, just everyone hit that site.
No, I still find you guys in the, if you do certain searches, it's like critical hits right at the top.
And yeah,
like,
exactly.
Oh, wait a minute. Was that true before? I'm not sure.
That was true before, but
okay.
I think that's more like how websites work, that, you know, if you put that name everywhere, then you have a greater chance of coming up.
Okay.
But other things, like, there's some search term like D&D 4E Delve or something, you know, like certain combos like that were the top.
Yeah,
you know,
that kind and the of other thing is images that we post. If we tag it with the title and enough people go to it, then that pops up and redirects to us.
Okay. Yep. All right. Well, that's amusing. That's good.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of people are looking for that stuff. You know, like a lot of people are interested in the game and they're searching out there for it.
So does that mean you're taking a different slant on interviews and content now, or the same one?
I like to think of us as serious journalists, unaffected by our success and fame. We're still...
All right, then.
So, do you have any more questions for us, or should we start asking you questions?
I'll ask more later on.
Okay. So, let's throw it back around. Now that the game has been out for a few months, like, since the last time we talked to you was, like, way before the game was out, you know, how are things different now? How do you think the reception's been? How do you think people are dealing with it?
The reception has been pretty good. It's very interesting that people who are playing it really enjoy it, and we're selling out of everything. I don't know if people have already told you this, but one of the most interesting things for me is that we sold out of the second adventure before it had been published.
Wow.
So that fact is huge. It's sort of like, it means that people are not only buying the game just to, like, take a look at it and see, but they're also then going ahead and, you know, continuing to play it, and they want more content. And I think the thing we talked about before, I'm remembering that at least some point during that last conversation, I was saying that, well, the one interesting thing is the people who are really committed to a particular way of playing 3rd edition RPGs, a few of them will have trouble going ahead and adjusting, and that does appear to be true. But our hope and our belief was that that would be a relatively small number, and that lots and lots of other people, including some people who felt that way right at first, when they started playing, the sequence does seem to be something like this. Well, I don't like it because it's new and I'm not going to keep playing. And then I don't, you know, actually it's not as bad as I thought, but it's not D&D.
Right.
And then the next fallback point is, well, it's not D&D, but I am playing.
Right.
And then the next... You know, and so there's a sequence.
Yeah,
and
I the think begrudging that, acceptance.
That's a natural sequence. It is really funny. I've heard a couple of hilarious things from friends who whose groups didn't expect to like it and didn't want to like it. But then now they're all playing it and really loving it, except for one guy.
Right.
Now, one guy, he'll play, but he says he doesn't like it. And the reason is, okay, something like, hold on a minute. Because... half-dragons, humans can now be as strong as half-dragons. And that's wrong.
Right. They have their own specific deal-breakers, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, and the deal-breaker is somewhere out there, you know, it's because alignment isn't the same.
Right.
And I just cannot accept Dungeons & Dragons reality. Now, what that means in a certain sense is those pieces are touching to me in a way, because what it means is that D&D gives it to people's... Okay, honestly, what it really means, and people don't necessarily want to hear this, but it means that Dungeons & Dragons gets into people's lives as thoroughly as religious faith.
Right.
And when... Oh, I can see my publicist really happy about that moment. But then...
You're the first staff member who has touched on religion and
very D&D. And so and what I mean there is that people get into the point that that's really how they think, that's really what they believe. Now, when those things are challenged by something new, it's like that could be really hard for some people to be like, okay, well, I'll change it. And I think that for the most part, this has been a new, fun way to play, and people are really loving it. And then there's a couple people who are like, but I like, you know,
yeah.
And so what'll be really interesting to see in the long run is whether those people, how many eventually over the years come around, or, you know, the other possibility is just that Well, there's always been many RPGs and people playing them in many different ways, and that's kind of good, because if that's the case and there's several that are strong, that means that people who don't like one flavor get to play another. Mm-hmm. So really what we're hoping for is the fourth edition, I mean, held a certain responsibility to go ahead and try to get new players to understand it quickly, people to enjoy it fast, and people to always remember what happened in their first games.
Right.
And with that in mind, that's fourth edition's goal.
Have you gotten a lot of feedback from like new players or long lapse players?
I think it's really, when I say I got a lot of feedback, partly what I'm doing is anecdotal.
Okay.
You know, I can't be scientific. It's I'm not sitting there trolling around, like, finding out, okay, what does everybody think?
Logging every single message
in your
spreadsheet.
I think a lot of times we answer questions like that. We say, yes, heard from all, and the answer is, well, sure, I've heard from tons of people like that, but that doesn't, I mean, I don't
it's
know
good
what
enough
that,
for us.
Yeah, okay, I don't know what it represents in the greater world, but one of the interesting things is lapsed, let's call them either lapsed players or people who never played D&D who were interested hugely in other role-playing games. It's like there's been an awful lot of people who, like the indie game guys, we now have a bunch of the indie game guys starting to write for us as freelancers, which I find really happy and really exciting. First, because they're really creative and good writers and have interesting ideas, and second, because beforehand they weren't interested in D&D. They were interested in only in like, well, mainstream games don't give me what I want. I'm going to go ahead and create something that does give me that. Well, obviously, I know the indie guys will continue to make their own games. That's perfect, and they should. But a lot of them are also playing 4th edition. A lot, you know. And so that's great, because it means that for one thing, we're going to be able to take advantage of some of the creativity of that crowd. And another, that the people who they excite and bring into their games are usually a creative bunch. And that it's also a sign that the game appeals to people who had an angle on experiencing role-playing games that we weren't meeting before.
Right.
And now maybe we are to some extent. And I really like that.
I think it also speaks to the game design a bit, because like, these are guys who really delve into rules very specifically for what they want to do, and, you know, very, like, even though they focus the story aspect, they have these very specific mechanics for what they want to do, and the fact that they're adopting 4th edition is sort of implicitly saying, like, we like the mechanics that go with the style of play.
I think you're right. And just taking that and spinning the converse of exactly what you said is that they're used to mechanics that have a specific goal, and that is 4th edition's mechanics. Whereas 3rd edition and 3.5 are pretty good. I mean, it's a good game, but it's also sort of an archaeological layer of systems that might have even been built for something else, sort of. And later on, we're kind of jury-rigged and so I think that that's a part of it. Yeah.
Okay.
New players, it's like, only personally, I've only managed to teach two brand new players. One of them was a 10-year-old who didn't even have to spend 5 seconds before he was like, I'm a dragonborn! You know, it was just like, well, you could be an elf, a black human, or the guy with the dragon head! I breathe fire, you know. Actually, he chose lightning, because he spends like half an hour with the books, and was like, looks like other things have resistance to fire. Lightning! This kid's never.
You have a future role?
Yeah, I know. Oh my god. Yeah. So, in other words, that kid's a little extreme, probably, because he was like a 10-year-old shark. It's like, he made me realize I'm never going to play without a DM screen again. You know, it's like, 10 years old, no ethics whatsoever. But he loved it, and he's into it, and the old taught one adult how to play, and the speed with which they were playing was great. Fun. And that's in my civilian life, I'm sorry. The number of people who I've taught while on duty is legion.
Of course.
And they seem to be doing fine also.
The legions of players now. We've talked to a bunch of people about products that are soon coming out, but what I'd like to know is what product are that you're not working on at all that you'd like to do.
Wow.
Just got to think about that one.
Okay, now that's funny, because that's the kind of pause, reflect, and question that I haven't... I've been more on that B.B. King song, "Don't look down if you want to keep on moving." You know, I've just been running here.
Yeah.
What project would I want to do that we don't? If I'm lucky, I'm going to come up with a nice answer to that by the time we finish this interview.
Great.
But I'm not going to waste your time by sitting here and scratching my head.
Then I'll go on to something else. You worked a lot on the Oriental Adventures for 3rd edition, correct?
Well, you know, no. That's the funny part about it. Again, without wasting your time, I was supposed to. And James Wyatt and I were splitting duties. He and I were both supposedly L5R Gold Edition story guys and Oriental Adventures writers. I, as a person who worked on a lot of trading card games before, just sort of took over the L5R stuff. And James, perforce, because the L5R stuff wasn't letting me go, ended up doing Oriental Adventures on his own.
Okay.
Along with maybe, I think, Owen Stevens helped, and I'm not sure if anybody else did a lot of work. So, but my only contribution was, like, was helping with the rules for Iejutsu Duels.
Okay. Those are good rules, I'll give you that.
Okay. All right. Good. They definitely were better after working on them, but yeah, so I think that was all I did. That and some playtesting.
Okay.
So feel free to ask me an Oriental Adventures question, because I like it. You know, it's good. James did it.
I guess the question I want to do is, do you see an approach to that for 4th edition versus there was, for 3rd edition, you have the separate Oriental Adventures book, then for 3.5, it was sort of split up into the separate books. So do you see that being put into, like, Martial Power and Arcane, or do you see it coming out as a separate supplement itself?
That is a really... Okay, the reason that's a really interesting question is that both paths are possible. From an R&D perspective, there would be no reason not to go ahead and, in a product like Arcane Power 2 or Divine Power 2 or something, you know, do Shugenja. And then therefore, in some future players' handbooks, do Ninja and Samurai. That makes total sense. The question mark is from a brand perspective of whether you want all those Oriental Adventure classes just spread through the core world, or put into one Oriental Adventures book. And that's a brand perspective.
Yeah.
So it's like, I can, like, weigh in on it, but I'm not going to be making that call.
Okay.
Because, for several reasons. You know, for one thing, whenever they make an Oriental Adventures book, they sell it like sushi. You know, it's woo! You have a conveyor belt. Here, give us more. And so it's a huge line product.
Yeah.
So that is an amusing reason why they might want to do it. But simultaneously, on the other hand, the problem is that once they do that, a lot of DMs go ahead and say, no, you can't play a ninja. And no, you can't play a samurai, because those live in that book right there. And I don't have to use that book. Whereas when we go ahead and design really interesting classes, with the amount of effort and work we're putting in design classes now, the last thing we want
to
do is tell DMs, don't use that. You know, that's terrible. So, wow. Good question.
Thank you.
Do you think we'll be seeing more classes that sort of fit into the D&D milieu and like, future players' handbooks and that kind of thing?
I think what we'll be... obviously, what our real goal is to, when we make a class, to not only make it exciting and fun, but to show people how it fits into the D&D world right from the start. And the flavor of the class is really important for that, and the background. I don't see any reason why something called a ninja couldn't be in the core, you know, personally. But then again, I'm one person with a voice, and you know, who knows what will happen. So, when we do, obviously, the big deal is that key is a power source. Several of the key classes would likely be ones that would fit into an Oriental Adventures book.
Yeah.
However, when we do that player's handbook, it's not like it's only going to have those classes. So, I think that that's really the starting point of the answer to your question. It's like, we're not going to do an Oriental Adventures book before we do that player's handbook. And once we do that, what happens after that is a, you know, still to be determined.
Okay.
So, I did a lot of work on the Feng Shui game that Daedalus did years ago. So this stuff is near and dear to my heart. And I really, you know, I really wanted to do the key source book right away. But
so do we have you to thank for Minions as being like MOOCs, or is that more of a team effort?
I don't honestly think I can say no, you have me to thank for it. I mean, I think that enough people at Wizards who were involved in the design have played Feng Shui and other, you know, enough other games that when the who knows? I've got no recollection of when the concept came.
Minions just showed up and were like, include us in the player.
I'm reasonably certain. The funny thing is that it isn't a matter of who. I know that the earliest discussions that like they created them were the feeling that we wanted characters to feel really, really heroic by actually mowing down waves of enemies. Okay. So then it's like, all right, and now what happens with those waves of enemies? What are the mechanics that make them work? Oh, well, I guess we know that already, don't we? You know, so Minions mechanics went through a few different changes at different times, and I personally don't think they're deadly enough now. And
We were in an adventure workshop yesterday with and one of the discussions was if Minions become just throw away and people ignore the Minions, and they were saying ways of using the Minions as flanking tools to great combat advantage, and
or like in Keeper of the Shadowfell, where the Minions throw themselves in front of the bad goblin.
Monsters using Minions as throwaway troops. But the other discussion we had was epic level Minions, that there's only, I think, two in the Monster Manual, and the tough decision of if something's that powerful, how can you justify having a Minion of it? So, it's...
One way that I would use mechanically would just be to make them a lot deadlier.
Yeah.
So that feel free to ignore this, but you're going to pay. I think that that'll happen. I don't think that the last word on Minions has been written. I think that there'll be some developments there.
The Minions Handbook. The complete Minions Handbook. There we go.
That alternate world is, let's see, hold on a minute. That's probably if you want to like propose that to Chris Young through D&DI,
okay.
Dominion's Handbook, I'm glad I'm not writing it. Who knows, maybe something would come out of that. I don't know. I think Minions, the one interesting thing is I think that Minions can die so easily depending on how many area effect powers, multiple target powers players have. And what that really just means is that when game masters go ahead and like use Minions as a staple in an encounter and say, these four Minions really do equal one monster at that level, it's like... That's only a maybe. That's a hypothetical, and it's entirely possible the player character actions will erase that supposed one monster really, really quickly.
Yeah.
And especially, for instance, if the Minions' initiative is low, and they're sitting there waiting around, and everybody realizes, oh, now, if area effect powers are actually something that the character really should be using on other enemies, well, you know, that can sort of be taking part of the character's resources and slowing them down in the fight, which is what the Minions are supposed to do. But it's an interesting gray area, and I don't quite think we've exploited it enough yet.
Okay.
So, as a person who's working on future monster manuals, I will say that Minions might be, you know, nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. Minions might be nice. That's a
Yeah. There might be a little bit more sauciness. Now, simultaneously, Merle's angles are both good design ideas, he has some for that, and also more explanations to scenario writers and DMs about making your Minions count. As you say, the Minions Handbook is what you were talking about. So, and that process of education is something we're just starting.
Right.
Especially since we're, you know, figuring some things out ourselves. So
along those lines, reminding me, so Errata is sort of this big question right now that a lot of people are talking about, especially as far as a lot of the monsters go, like a lot of the hit points sort of got adjusted and that kind of thing. I mean, of course, there are many reasons that errata happens, but do you have any recommendations for sort of dealing with them in your actual game at home? Like,
in terms of how particular play groups or DMs should go ahead and deal with errata?
Yeah. Like, what, do you have any suggestions on easy ways? Or?
I know that I went ahead and just looked at the errata and made little notes in my books. And I think that we might be able to eventually publish the errata in a format that sort of like the way old games like ASL and others did it, where it's like, oh, here's the actual paragraph that you could go ahead and copy in if you want. I don't, but that hasn't happened yet. Although I think it might be for a couple fixes that are coming up that are a little bigger. No, I don't have particularly great advice for that. I think that the most important ones are ones that are actually sort of changing some of the rules, the monster-by-monster hit points and damage, amounts of damage they do, are significant because you can have a... Yeah, the ogres are attacking. They don't really seem to be a threat. Well, that ogre savage should be doing more damage. Those kind of typos matter. They don't break the game. So really, I mean, DMs could, you know, miss the errata on the monster manual and it wouldn't kill them. But it helps to look at it. It basically, I think the best thing to do is, if you're a DM, take a quick scan of the errata. You decide very quickly whether or not you care and whether your group cares, and then, you know, proceed from there. Because the funny thing is, the errata is written in a fashion that some people won't care. Right. Now, I think there might be, there are rules things coming up, I think, that will matter because they're pieces of the rules that are a little, they don't quite work right now, but they will work really well with a little change. Those things, yeah, it's really helpful to know. I don't know, I don't think we could put
not the minutiae.
You can't put a flag on the errata going, really, you should pay attention to this one, you know, but I think maybe when we print out a new one column of text, that's an indication, yeah, care about that one.
Right. Big bold letters everywhere.
Yeah, I don't know.
Something.
That's my style, but I don't think it's our official errata style.
Right.
Okay.
I think we're just about out of time.
Okay, so let's see. I was supposed to come up with a product that I really wanted to do, but I can't. Now, here's the amusing thing. A lot of the stuff I really want to do, we're doing. So it's not like I'm...
And you can't talk about that
pining,
stuff.
Pining about it. And that stuff I'm not going to talk about. I could imagine... The fact is that the product I most want to do and can't is the Key Player's Handbook. And that's because I love that style of game, and it, you know, fits the campaigns I run and everything. So, I think I'm entirely... That's the one I really want to do and can't right now.
Okay. So, that's a good answer.
Yeah. So, right. As far as other questions for you, what will you guys be doing in a year? Exactly this?
Hopefully.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Excellent. Then we'll see you at another convention.
Yep. Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay.